KQED.
From KQED Public Radio, this is Forum. I'm Scott Schaefer, here this week for Michael Krasny. In the first hour, Green Power Play. Nine cities and towns in Marin County are on the verge of banding together to buy more renewable energy, like solar and wind power. The Marin Energy Authority is facing stiff opposition from PG&E, and a civil grand jury in Marin recently warned that the plan is too risky, saying it was time to pull the plug on it. Coming up, the pros and cons of this push for greener electricity. Is it a giant step toward combating global warming or an expensive minefield of unintended consequences? You're invited to join us, and we'll get started right after this. Good morning and welcome to Forum. I'm Scott Schaefer, here today for Michael Krasny. Well, there's broad consensus that developing more renewable energy is key to fighting global warming. Less power from coal-burning power plants and more from wind, geothermal, and solar. Well, Marin County is taking that to heart. It's formed the Marin Energy Authority to bring more renewable power to cities and towns that have agreed to form a consortium to buy green energy. The group hopes to provide at least 25% of its power from renewable sources, compared with the 14% PG&E now provides. But the utility is strongly opposed to the idea, along with others. And there's a lot of enthusiasm and strong opposition to this idea, and we're sure to hear both in this hour. Joining us, Dawn Wise. She's interim director of the Marin Energy Authority. Good to have you with us.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thanks very much.
Also here in the studio with me, Paul Fenn. He's president of Local Power Incorporated. They kind of opened the door for all of this with some state legislation they wrote back in 2002. Good morning to you.
Thank you, Scott. It's a pleasure to be here.
Also joining us by phone, David Rubin. He's a director of service analysis at PG&E. Good morning.
Scott, good morning. Thanks for having us.
You bet. Also, Severin Borenstein, professor at UC Berkeley's Haas School of Business and co-director of the Energy Institute over there. Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, let's begin with you, Dawn Wise, if we can. Give us kind of a status report. Help us understand what exactly Marin County is trying to do and how you're going about it.
Sure, absolutely. First, I just want to say it's a pleasure to be here with you and the KQED listeners. I expect there's keen interest in our Marin Clean Energy work, and this is a great platform for the discussion. The Marin Clean Energy program is possible because of a state law, AB 117, which allows local governments to purchase power directly for their communities without having to take over the poles and the wires. The program has been designed after 7 years of study and planning by experts in the field, and it's modeled after successful similar programs across the state and the country. We intend to begin serving customers on June 1st. Once we go live, energy customers in Marin County will have three choices. They can continue to receive their energy supply from PG&E, or they could choose our light green energy product, which is 25% renewable energy. It'll come in at or below PG&E's projected prices. And then there will also be the deep green energy product, which customers can choose. That will come in at 100% renewable energy from day one, but it'll come at a slight premium of between $3 and $4 a month for each customer. So customers will have a choice of those three options. And by doing this, we'll be able to grow renewable energy in Marin from the current level, which is 14%, to 25% initially, and then 100% in 6 years.
And where are these energy providers? Where are they located?
The energy will be sourced from various sites around California. We're looking to source as much as possible from local sites near Marin County and in Northern California.
And are these energy providers that PG&E would not use? They would not get energy from them? Or are you competing with PG&E in some way?
Actually, it's a little bit like cutting out the middleman. We'll be going directly to energy wholesalers that currently are used by PG&E.
Mm-hmm. And what about the costs? There are some upfront costs for the cities and towns that have opted into this, right?
Actually, no. There are no upfront costs for cities and towns. There has been a loan provided by the County of Marin that would be paid back in the first few years of operations.
Who pays for that, though?
The County of Marin is loaning that funding.
So that taxpayer money, though?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And that would be paid back by ratepayers over time. There is no commitment of funding from the member cities and towns or the taxpayers beyond the initial startup loan that I just mentioned, because this program is funded by ratepayers. It's a little bit like redirecting the existing ratepayer stream that flows to PG&E, our incumbent utility, and using that to build our own local programs. So it's not an additional source of revenue. It's an existing source of revenue.
Now, we've seen major fights, especially in San Francisco, over municipalization. This is not that, correct? I mean, this is not the Marin County taking over the transmission lines or even the billing. I mean, PG&E will continue to distribute the power that your consortium buys, correct?
Correct. And PG&E would continue to provide the customer service and the billing. So folks would still get their bills from PG&E. But the line item that says generation on your bill would be the only area that would be affected. And that line item would then flow to the Marin Energy Authority to buy local renewable power.
And what's the goal?
The goal is to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. And by launching this program, we'll be able to impact our greenhouse gas reductions and see a 17% reduction, which is a really dramatic greenhouse gas reduction. This is in our overall greenhouse gas emissions in Marin County. We will be second only to Portland, Oregon, in the amount of greenhouse gas reductions that have been achieved across the country. Portland was able to do this through a big general fund investment in their transportation infrastructure. We would be able to do it simply by redirecting an existing revenue stream into local renewable projects.
Now, David Rubin with PG&E, let me bring you into this. PG&E, of course, is opposed to this. You've lobbied against it. There's some talk of challenging the plan based on CEQA, the California Environmental Quality Act. What is the basis of PG&E's opposition to this?
Okay, thank you, Scott. Let me start off, first of all, by way of saying that we agree with Marin very significantly on the overall goal of the program, which is to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. It's something that, as a utility company, we work hard at every day. We're a national leader on energy efficiency, which is helping our customers use energy more efficiently so that they don't need the next kilowatt hour. We're also a national leader with respect to renewables, both procuring renewables to provide to our customers, as well as helping them install renewables to produce or meet their own needs. We have one of the cleanest electricity portfolios within the country. So coming at it from that perspective, again, we are working hard every day to continue to provide our customers with a cleaner mix. And in that regard, we are in violent agreement with MEA that the objective is to continue to drive carbon out of the power mix. What we don't agree with, though, is the mode. We've taken a look very thoroughly at their business plan, all of the associated documents, and we believe that in point of fact it will end up increasing greenhouse gas emissions. And let me explain how. What they're doing right now is circulating a draft contract that they've developed with a third-party provider. They haven't specifically identified who the provider is, but the first-line bidder is Shell Energy. Shell, if you take a look at their renewable mix for the customers that they serve in California, is at a low single-digit percentage. The contract specifically says that Shell or whomever the contractor is will not need to develop new resources in order to provide the power requested under the contract. So even if Shell is able to deliver 25% renewable supplies under the contract, there's no specific identification of any other resource that would be brought into the mix that would reduce greenhouse gases. And if you take a look at PG&E's 50% or greater greenhouse gas free power compared to 25% renewable supply, but probably 75% greenhouse gas emitting power under the contract, there will be an increase in greenhouse gas emissions.
That's not really the basis of the opposition, though, is it? I mean, you're a for-profit utility. Aren't you concerned that they're going to take customers away from PG&E?
Our concern is that our customers are going to hear the same information that has been presented to the city councils over the course of the last couple of years and be led to believe that they're actually going to be able to get additional clean energy at no additional cost. All of the taste, none of the calories. It sounds too good to be true. And we really do believe that, in point of fact, when it's set in motion, it will end up either increasing costs and or increasing greenhouse gas emissions, and likely both.
Paul Fenn, let me bring you into this. You have been involved in these kinds of issues for a while. Your organization has been. Is there a model that's working somewhere else, either in another part of California or another part of the United States, that you can point to that either backs up what Don is saying or, you know, or undermines what David is saying, or both?
Well, there is. Excuse me. The community choice structure, which began in the early 90s on the East Coast in Massachusetts, led to the formation of similar programs to the Marin Clean Energy Program in Cape Cod, Massachusetts, where the Cape Light Compact has provided all residents with electricity service since, I believe, 1999, runs very innovative energy efficiency programs, is very popular with ratepayers, and currently has innovative solar and smart grid and other programs serving those communities. Then you have in Ohio, the Northeast Ohio Public Energy Council formed just a couple of years later.
What about here in California? I mean, has anyone other than Marin taken advantage of this 2002 legislation that that your group authored?
Yes. In fact, the city of San Francisco has just in recent weeks released a solicitation similar to the Marin Energy Authority's so-called CCA RFP, which is requesting bids from energy suppliers.
But it hasn't actually been. They're behind Marin, right? And is there anyone that's actually implemented this beyond what Marin is trying to do in this coming year?
Well, you know, in the Central Valley, the Kings River Conservation District, in conjunction with an irrigation district, attempted to implement CCA with I think it was around a dozen municipalities, but under very aggressive, hostile lobbying and PR from PG&E, they have unwound their program and are currently in suspension.
What do you mean hostile?
I mean active lobbying of member city councils, substantial funding of advertising and adversarial advertising and in the jurisdictions that would have been served by that public agency.
Well, I'm going to bring in one of the mayors of the cities in Marin County. As I said at the top, I think eight or nine Dawn cities have actually opted in, including Mill Valley, Fairfax, San Rafael, Sausalito. Among the three cities that have opted out is Novato, and Novato's mayor, Gene McLamey, joins us now by phone. Good to have you with us this morning.
Good morning, Paul.
This is Scott. If you could describe for me, if you would, why Novato? What was the process that led Novato to opt out?
Well, first of all, I'm speaking for myself. But in January, we had a seminar where we had both PG&E and representatives of Marin Clean Energy at a council meeting. And we had a good discussion and much public input. And at that time, I was the first on the council really to come out and say that I did not personally support Novato joining the Marin Energy Authority.
And what was the basis for that, opposition?
I really felt that I have no confidence that our government entities can operate a power authority without possible great financial risk. All you have to do is look at the federal and state governments that have huge financial deficits. Our state government continues to raid our local revenues as they try to ward off bankruptcy. Our county that has multi-million dollar structural deficits, unfunded pension and health care liabilities, as well as a new accounting system that's $18 million over budget and still not functioning. And in Novato, due to declining tax revenues and state raids and poor pension returns, we're faced with a 17% budget cut.
Mayor McLamey, a venture
where there's financial risk.
Mayor, I'm going to interrupt you for a second. We're not real happy with the phone line, so we're going to call you right back and try to see if we can get a better line so we can hear you a little bit better. So bear with us. Let me just ask you, though, Don Wise, you heard what the mayor just said, those concerns about risks and whether or not a city, especially a small city in a relatively small county, has the wherewithal to run something like this. What's your response to that?
Well, there are two things I'd like to say in response to that. The first is that in developing this program, we spent a lot of time looking at municipal utilities. And a lot of folks don't know this, but one out of every four energy customers in the state of California is served by a municipal utility. These are entities like SMUD, the Sacramento Municipal Utility District, Palo Alto, Los Angeles Department of Water and Power, and then they can range as small as Truckee. Truckee has their own municipal utility. So we've seen a long history of local governments running the power business in their communities for many years and quite successfully. Over time, consistently, the municipal utility rates come in about 20% lower than the investor-owned utility rates throughout California. So we found that they actually do a good job of administering these programs, and they tend to pass along a lot of savings to their ratepayers. When the energy crisis happened back about 10 years ago, the municipal utilities did very well compared to the investor-owned utilities because of their more conservative approach to power procurement.
But in terms of the Marin Energy Authority, it's one representative, one elected official from each of the cities and towns, and yourself as the director, interim director. And then what's the expertise? Do you have staff that advises you?
Yeah, we have, going back, we have a lot of technical expertise that's been assisting us over the last 7 years as we've been exploring this. Navigant Consulting has provided a lot of excellent work on our behalf. And there are a lot of folks out there that do this kind of work for local governments. The Northern California Power Authority is one. There are a lot of resources for bringing on that type of expertise. We also have other folks I can mention that have been helping us and will be helping us in the future. Going forward, our business plan projects a staff of about 20 people. So it's not huge, but it does include a lot of technical expertise.
Mayor McLamey, let me bring you back into the conversation. Nevada was in the minority here when it comes to Marin cities. As I mentioned, Fairfax, Ross, San Rafael, Sausalito, and others have joined it. What do you think you know that they don't?
Well, I think, first of all, if you look at the state of California, there are no other communities at this time that have chosen to join a community choice aggregation. And so we're in the boat with them, we haven't chosen to join here locally. I think what Novato has done is stay focused on our key priorities, which is being financially sustainable. And this is a high-risk operation I feel that we don't need to get into.
And do you see any potential downside for Novato or cost to your city treasury, even though you're not involved, because you are, of course, still part of the county?
Well, I think there's been some indication that if we don't meet the requirements of AB 32, the state could come back and fine us. But what I would hope that we would do, and we are doing, is continue to work collaboratively with PG&E. We're going to work with staff and council to offer an AB 811 program, and we have just passed our climate action plan that does meet the AB 32 requirements. We can accomplish 60% of our AB 32 requirements just by attracting higher-paying jobs to Novato and revising our general plan to encourage housing near transit and employment.
All right, I want to bring Severin Bornstein in just a moment, but Don Wise, you wanted to respond to the mayor.
Yeah, I'd just like to point out a couple of things, that the other programs that that can be put forward outside of this Marin Clean Energy Program do cost money, and that's where we see a greater risk to the general fund. What we're allowed to do through this program is actually lock in costs. The draft contract that's under review right now in Marin County would allow us to lock in costs for a five-year period, which is something we're not currently able to do with our incumbent utility. We believe that that allows us to really minimize the amount of risk going forward, because we know what the County of Marin and the City of Mill Valley is going to know what their cost for energy is going to be 5 years going forward. If we remain only with our incumbent utility, PG&E, the power costs are unknown because rates can be set at any time, and we do not have a choice aside from from going without power. We don't have another choice in, you know, choosing a product that has a better price or has a higher green content. So we see the risk really staying with the status quo is a slightly higher risk because we are required to pay whatever the rates are going forward.
Severin Borenstein with the Energy Institute at UC Berkeley, you've been listening to this conversation. What do you see as the sort of pros and cons, the risks and the potential benefits here?
Well, I think that what has come out is a number of issues that often come up in these sorts of choice issues. It's worth pointing out that this is basically an extension of electricity deregulation. This is retail choice, the only type that really survived the California electricity crisis, which is community choice aggregation. But it's the concept that a group of people, in this case through a nonprofit, come together and buy their power separately while the utility still provides transmission and distribution. There are two good reasons one might want to do that. One is to buy more green power than the utility is going to provide. If the utility is choosing a certain mix and the community isn't happy with it, they could, through this process, decide we're going to go to a much more greener mix. That costs more, however. Green power just simply is more expensive than power from natural gas or coal.
Is that partly because the demand is lower?
No, it's partly.
It's just more expensive to produce.
The technology is not there yet. It's getting better, but even wind power these days is not cost competitive. It's close. And if you go primarily with wind power, it doesn't raise costs very much.
But if you increase the demand, doesn't that increase the incentive for companies to innovate and make it less expensive?
Well, it might eventually, but it's not going to do it through Marin itself. It's going to do it through a worldwide change. But if you look at these technologies, the current technologies for alternative energy are unlikely to be able to become cost competitive until we're willing to step up and put a major price on greenhouse gases, which we're just not. You know, the bills that are going through the U.S. Congress right now and what's happening in California is not going to put a price on greenhouse gases that will come anywhere near equalizing the cost of renewable power with conventional power.
But we've heard Don Wise say that it actually isn't going to be more expensive.
And that may be true in the short run, but depending on the contracts, of course, they don't have the contracts yet. And contracts are very complex, and that comes to the second point, which is the other reason you might want to do a CCA is because you think that your organization can procure power more effectively than the utility. And there are certainly plenty of arguments that regulated utilities are not the most efficient organizations. On the other hand, getting into the power business is a pretty complex business to try to jump into and do well, as we saw during the electricity crisis. There are a lot of terms to these contracts. It isn't simply you give us the power and we pay you X cents per kilowatt hour. There are all sorts of terms about the conditions under which they have to deliver, changes in costs over time, and so forth. And so these projections of what you can really lock in are difficult to actually stand by, particularly when the seller often has some sort of ability to back out of the contract if, for instance, they end up not developing their green energy sources. So I think that it's important to recognize that green power does cost more. If you're going to have a portfolio that's richer in green power, it probably will cost at least a bit more. If you really think that this organization can do a much better job than PG&E in procuring power, then it still might be worth it. And that's the trade-off.
All right. We're going to stop right there because we need to take a break. That's Severin Borenstein from the Energy Institute at UC Berkeley's Haas School of Business. I want to say goodbye to Gene McLamey, the mayor of Novato. Thanks so much for joining us this half hour. I know you have to go, but we appreciate your spending some time with us. And we want to... Thank you very much. We want to get you involved, our listeners, in the conversation as well. You can call our toll-free number. It's 866-733-6786. Again, that's 866-733-6786. Or you can email us. It's forum@kqed.org. And now you can also leave your questions and comments on our website. It's kqed.org/forum. I'm Scott Schaefer here this morning for Michael Krasny. Lots more to talk about. Stay with us. And welcome back to Forum. Scott Schaefer here this morning for Michael Krasny. And this hour, we're looking at a plan by the Marin Energy Authority to compete with Pacific Gas and Electric as a retailer of electricity. Their goal is to provide more renewable energy to the county. Our guests include Dawn Wise. She's interim director of the Marin Energy Authority. Also, Paul Fenn, president of Local Power Incorporated. David Rubin is here from Pacific Gas and Electric. And Severin Borenstein with us. He's with the Energy Institute at UC Berkeley's Haas School of Business. Once again, if you'd like to join our conversation, the phone number to call is 866-733-6786. Let's go to our calls now. Suzanne is on the line in San Francisco. Hi, Suzanne.
Hi. I have a question for Dave about the high cost of fossil fuel energy.
For David Rubin for PG&E?
Yeah. He talks about that fossil fuel energy is the cheapest form of energy, but he doesn't go into any of the external costs of getting fossil fuel energy and that other alternative energy forms are actually a lot cheaper.
I think that was Severin.
When you go down in the long term.
I think that was Severin Borenstein saying that just before the break. Am I right,
okay.
Severin?
Well, I was saying that as long as we're not willing to price greenhouse gases, fossil fuel power will be cheaper. And I think that's unfortunate, but I think that's also the political reality that's forming around the country, that we're not going to put the sort of dollar number you would have to put on greenhouse gases to make renewable power competitive right now.
Paul Fenn.
I guess I'd like to make an argument here in favor of the caller's question. I think it's correct. There is a presumption about the prices both of renewables as being somehow fixed to the technology, as well as the price of fossil fuel power somehow being a fixed number. I mean, obviously, the price of natural gas is more volatile today than it's ever been. That volatility has doubled, tripled the price of electricity over the past 5 years. In the state of California, renewable energy technologies are unique in being more of a fixed cost. However, they are coming down, and the major factor in their cost, something that's often unaddressed by economists and technologists, is the cost of capital. One of the major advantages that Marin Energy Authority has over PG&E in the development of renewable energy is that they enjoy a lower cost of capital to finance those investments. Renewable energy being all capital intensive, that is lacking the fuel element, which is 90% of the cost of power from a fossil fuel plant, is disproportionately impacted by that cost of capital. So we have an opportunity here to lower the cost of renewables, not merely to increase the amount.
All right, Suzanne, thanks for the call. Severin Borenstein, earlier you were saying that it's going to take more than just Marin County to create a push for innovation and bring the cost down for renewables. But don't you have to begin somewhere? I mean, we just saw how difficult it was in Copenhagen to come up with an agreement, an international agreement. Why not begin local?
And I have no problem with that whatsoever. In fact, if the people of Marin want to say, look, we're going to take this step forward and we're going to make this commitment, that's great. But I think they just need to recognize that they're not going to save money. And in fact, it's probably going to cost them more. And I have to sort of make a point that respond to Paul Fenn's point about lower cost of capital. The reason an organization has a low cost of capital is because they're making low risk investments of some sort. And if they start getting into higher risk investments, what they're basically doing is taking that debt rating from some other investments and using it to subsidize these investments. Because the bottom line is PG&E has a pretty low cost of capital compared to most entrepreneurs. And yet the reason Marin can have a lower cost of capital is because they're basically taking debt from a solid organization and putting the risk on that organization. So it's not like a low cost of capital just comes for free. Somebody does have to bear that risk ultimately.
Dawn Wise from the Marin Energy Authority, you want to respond to that?
Yeah, a couple of things. The reason that as a municipal entity we're able to achieve savings over the investor-owned utilities is not only that we have a lower cost of capital, but we have lower overhead. We do not have to pay shareholder profits, and that which are substantial. And those kinds of benefits are what result in municipal utilities having about 20% lower rates. Now, we're able to take that advantage and use that to procure some renewable energy. And by locking in renewable energy and shifting to ownership of our own renewable assets, which is part of our business plan. We hope to be there within 6 or 7 years owning the bulk of our own assets. we are actually able to unhook from the fluctuating cost of fossil fuels, which, as Paul Finn was saying, they're very volatile. They go up, they go down. You can't lock in your costs if you don't know what they're going to be going forward. If we shift to a model where we own our own renewable assets and they're built, they're in the ground, and there's no source of fuel, the costs really do come down over time. And we're looking at dramatic reductions in costs, dramatic savings to our customers going forward 10 years, 20 years, and on into the future.
We've got an email. Go ahead, Severin Borenstein, yes.
It's just not true that you can say you're going to give your customers dramatic reductions in costs. It's just completely speculative to argue that you're going to be able to, on a long-run basis, have much lower costs than fossil fuels. It may turn out to be true, but it's really relying on some pretty strong projections about further increases in natural gas prices that really are not supported. I have no problem with the idea that we want to go for a much greener portfolio, but I just don't want people to think that we're going to get lower costs as well and then find out that they're not. There's a reason that a number of CCAs have been started around the state and haven't come to fruition. And by and large, it's because they hired consultants who gave them reports that said, you can do this, and it's going to lower your costs, and you're going to have much greener power at the same time. And then when they really tried to procure the power, it turned out it wasn't that cheap. And
well,
so I just don't want people to think that, you know, this is a free lunch that they can suddenly get both. Paul, I'm all for investing in green power.
Paul Finn?
You know, there is a kind of presumption in the market here, and I think it's prejudicial, that green power is uniformly more expensive. Back at the first CCA, the first very large CCA that formed in Northeast Ohio, when it formed, switched over. This was the Northeast Ohio Public Energy Council.
And we should just remind people, CCA is Community Choice Aggregation.
Yes, the policy we're discussing.
The consortium sort of thing.
Exactly. The first large aggregation switched from a mix of coal and nuclear power to renewables and gas-fired power, reducing their greenhouse gas emissions by 33% overnight, reducing overall pollution by 75%. And they enjoyed a guaranteed 5% discount on their rate within that contract with Green Mountain Energy from day one. There are elasticities in the market. There are nonlinear factors in the market that affect the cost basis for energy. It's not simply a commodity price.
We've got an email from Connie that speaks to this point, and she writes, how can Marin towns and members of the public decide whether MEA's Marin Energy Authority's contract with Shell is good or bad if MEA won't tell the public the key terms, including prices, before they approve the contract? Dawn Wise?
Yeah, this is actually the first time in Marin County that we've had a draft power supply contract on the street. And we think this is very exciting that the community is able to weigh in on our draft contract. The way it's been done historically is that our incumbent utility, PG&E, will approve contracts, you know, all the time, every year. There were many approved this year without any discussion at the public level in Marin County. So we have a draft power supply contract that includes a lot of provisions and a lot of detail for how power will be supplied for a 5-year period. It is now undergoing a 90-day review period where we've actually had more than 30 meetings just since October, public meetings with city councils, workshops, a lot of media attention to this. There's been a lot of dialogue. The one thing that it's not possible to put in a contract is pricing, because it's a little bit like buying a mortgage. You have to lock it in real time. We've received indicative pricing. We just received a pricing refresh from some of the bidders, and we'll be receiving final pricing in January. Now, our Marin Energy Authority Board has passed a resolution that they will not sign the contract, they will not execute the contract unless it will allow us to provide customer costs at or below PG&E's projected costs. So we feel that we've done as much as we can to make the document very public while making commitments around pricing once they come in.
Let's bring more of our callers in. Susan is on the line in San Anselmo. Hi, Susan.
Hi. I wanted to say, as a resident of Marin County and San Anselmo who has opted into the program, that I am thrilled to be part of a county that is doing something so positive and progressive to really meet the needs of our world and our environment. And I've just been thrilled. I've attended some of the public meetings. The people are so knowledgeable. They're willing to share information. If they aren't able to answer questions, they get back to you with the information that they need. And I'm really discouraged that there are so many agencies working to try to bring down something that is so positive, and it's a positive movement. This group, this Marin Energy Authority, is working tirelessly to help our community, and I just really feel as though we should rally around and support them in any way that we can to work together to really try to provide green energy in any way we can. And I'm just so happy to be one of the early counties in the country that's going to try to take this on.
All right, Susan, thanks for the call. David Rubin from PG&E, if there is more renewable energy out there, why not buy it? Why doesn't PG&E buy it?
That's actually a great question, Scott. The concern that we have is that the energy that's been identified as part of the MEA plan is not out there. We are in the market every day, locking in contracts, and now more recently, in fact, identifying resources that PG&E will own in order to work very, very aggressively to meet the renewable portfolio standard requirements that we have, around 20% of our supply being qualifying renewables, and then moving past 20% toward 33%. It is a very, very tight market. And when we look at the MEA draft contract, for example, not only are there not prices in there, but there's also not an identification of where the renewable power is going to come from, or, as I mentioned earlier, what will comprise the rest of the power that will be supplied under the contract. So we don't believe that, again, there is a lot of low-hanging fruit with respect to renewables. Now, that having been said, as I mentioned earlier, it is something that we go about very passionately, and we're working hard every day to bring new renewable supplies online.
So where is the MEA? Are you saying that the source the MEA is identifying is what, doesn't exist, or doesn't exist at the price they're hoping to get it at?
It doesn't exist at the price, but more importantly, Dawn mentioned earlier in her comments several times that these were going to be local supplies. We just simply don't have any kind of reasonable sense as to where in Marin, or where, even for that matter, within northern and central California, these supplies are going to be coming from. If Shell really is the counterparty, Shell does own wind supplies down in Southern California and up in Washington. That might be where some of the renewable power would be coming from.
What's wrong with that?
I'm not saying that there's anything necessarily wrong with it, but the point is, if that's in fact what they're drawing upon, and again, I mentioned the contract expressly says that there will be no development of new resources to satisfy the contract. All that this is really doing, in some sense, is moving power from one buyer to another. It's not creating new renewables that will help achieve our objectives of reducing greenhouse gas emissions.
Don Wise.
The renewable power that we need in Marin is definitely out there. We did an RFP process this year where we received many bids, many of which included local power.
RFP, request for proposal.
Correct. Request for power proposals, and we received quite a few. And I think the difference is that we are looking to procure power on a much smaller scale than PG&E would be looking. And so projects that come in at 20 megawatts, 40 megawatts may not be feasible for a large investor-owned utility, but actually work very well for us as far as chipping away at the load that we need.
Quick comment from you, David Rubin, and then we want to go to the phones.
Yes, and in point of fact, we are mining resources at all ends of the size spectrum. So it's not true that a new entrant would step into a very competitive marketplace and be able to harvest renewable supplies that we are not already out aggressively trying to attract or develop ourselves.
All right. Juliet is on the line from San Rafael. Hi, Juliet.
Hi. I'm with the ratepayer organization, Californians for Renewable Energy. And the ratepayers are the ones who are going to pay all the way. We are very much against Shell Energy. I fought with Communities for a Better Environment to get rid of MTBE, fighting all the oil companies to go backwards choosing a fossil fuel company, which is a shareholder company. And then they've got Navigant, which is a shareholder company, and Milbank Tweed, which is an LLP, which will be paying its lawyers profits. So on top of that, you have Marin Energy Authority staff, which will be part of a nonprofit, but you're layering in three more profit-sharing organizations. And the whole world of renewables in California has changed since June, where all of the utilities are fighting for land. And I can tell you that PG&E is looking at small renewables.
They're okay, Juliet, let me stop you there just to get a comment. And we've got a lot of folks who want to get on the air, but do you want to make a quick comment, Paul Fenn?
Yeah, I mean, I think the energy industry is a bad industry. That's what climate change means. It means that the conventional suppliers are destructive, and when it comes to implementing a change, that involves a transition from conventional supplies to new local supplies.
But wouldn't you agree that PG&E is one of the more progressive utilities in that regard in trying to incorporate more renewables?
I mean, PG&E is an innovator in self-promotion and marketing, but they have been non-compliant with the state renewable portfolio standard since it was written in 2002. They admit that. The only plan under which, in their own procurement plans, in which they intend to comply with AB 32 is a scenario under which entities like Marin Energy Authority are formed and help them comply. This is a non-compliant utility, just out of bankruptcy, the largest in history at its time, $11 billion. I don't call that a good job. So in a way, judging MEA or San Francisco, these programs, is against the backdrop of the last 10 years, a policy collapse and a failure, really, within this industry to deliver on either carbon, energy independence, ratepayer security, you name it.
David Rubin, quick response, then I'm going to get some emails in.
Paul is absolutely wrong on every single count, and I don't know that I've got the time to go through each one of them. But we have not said we will not meet the renewable portfolio standard. We expect to meet it. We're working hard to meet it.
All right, let's take some email here. Andy in San Rafael writes, while I supported the original concept of this sort of approach as a potential alternative to an investor-owned utility, now that the details, financial risks, provider, Shell, and third parties, grand jury report, all point toward pulling the plug, count me out. Kudos to the cities which have walked away and spared their residents from going down a disappointing dead end. Don Wise, there was that civil grand jury report that came out a few weeks ago and said it was too risky, that the benefits were really unclear, and as the email suggests, in fact, the title of the report was Pull the Plug. What's your response to the civil grand jury's report?
Well, the civil grand jury report really is a clearinghouse of all the misinformation that's been floating around this program, and we appreciated the opportunity to be able to respond to that. I encourage folks to look at our website, marinenergyauthority.org, and take a look at our response to that report. There are a lot of detailed areas that we don't have time to get into right now. I think it's also worth mentioning that the district attorney in Marin County is investigating the documented early release of this report prior to its formal release by PG&E employees. So there seems to be a connection there that is under investigation.
All right, another email from Richard, who writes, rather than going through this process, which is economically sketchy, why not provide a program like the one in Sonoma County, which provides the means for homeowners to install solar systems on their homes? Paul Fenn?
Well, it's really about carbon impact. If you want to reduce greenhouse gas emissions in a substantial way, you've got to achieve scale. And this is something that MEA officials have pointed out, that the AB811 type programs represent, I think it's somewhere around a 50th or less than a 50th of the greenhouse gas reductions that can be produced by this program alone. And as Don mentioned, those types of programs actually involve greater public risk and expenditures. In this case, you're just diverting existing ratepayer revenues to new investments.
Another email from Doug, who writes, there was so much talk about alternative energy being more expensive, but shouldn't there be a choice to pay more for this source of electricity as long as there's really good information and things that are transparent? The argument too expensive doesn't make sense. It's all about choice. Severin Bornstein, what about that argument?
Absolutely. I completely agree with that argument. As long as people are fully informed about what it's going to cost and they choose to spend more on it, I do not believe that we're going to voluntarily get there by people just choosing to individually become green. I think we do need national legislation to raise the price of carbon so that we can actually get people the right incentives. But I'm very worried that people will go down these roads being told that they're going to get huge savings. And this is the same problem with rooftop solar. People often are told they're going to get huge savings. And then they find out they're not, and we get another backlash, just as we did, for instance, against the early versions of compact fluorescent lights when people were told, these are great, you'll love them. And then they hated them so much it set back the industry 20 years.
Ellen is on the line from Larkspur. Welcome to the program.
Good morning. Thank you for the opportunity to speak. I've been following Marin Clean Energy for quite a while. Unfortunately, I live in a community that chose to opt out of Marin Clean Energy, so I don't have a choice whatsoever. And in conjunction with following the program for all this time, I've observed that PG&E has gotten more and more antagonistic and more defamatory, if you will, in their efforts to stop this program from happening. It would seem to me if they're fighting so hard about it, there must be a reason that they don't like it. They must be afraid that it actually might work.
David Rubin, what about that? Not only have you fought and lobbied against this, which of course is your right to do, you're also sponsoring, I believe, a ballot measure that would make it nearly impossible for local governments to opt into these kinds of CCAs. Are you worried that it may work and that it could end up costing PG&E customers?
No. Our concern, in fact, as I mentioned earlier, is that this is going to end up being a significant risk for our customers and for the community. And that's been our message all along. It hasn't been inflammatory. It's been very dispassionate and objective. And now that the grand jury report has come out, it notes many of the same risks that we have been articulating ourselves with respect to the risk to taxpayers associated with the contract and the borrowings, no guarantees on rates, and the fact that Marin residents don't get a vote, which we believe, and for that matter, the Marin IJ has been expressing all along. Paul had mentioned CCA programs in Ohio. Ohio does, in fact, require a vote. And we believe that that's important.
Why is PG&E, though, pushing to have it a two-thirds vote, that which is what the ballot measure, the language of the petition now being circulated for signatures? Why make it so much more difficult?
Well, we believe the two-thirds vote is appropriate for these types of major financial decisions that the county is moving ahead with.
But you can amend the Constitution with a simple majority.
Again, if you take a look at how much money is associated with this program, they've identified $375 million in bonds, which, by the way, I should mention, renewable investments would not require the two-thirds vote. Renewable investments are expressly excluded from the initiative. But, again, we believe that two-thirds is appropriate and is consistent with many major financial decisions that are undertaken in the state.
Paul Finn.
You know, this is a power grab, and the imposition of a Prop 13 style two-thirds supermajority requirement to implement local energy programs would effectively kill the authority of home rule under local control of communities to make decisions under that they have had the authority to make since the beginning of this country. If consumers were worried about the opportunity to have a new choice other than PG&E, then why did the Utility Reform Network and the Sierra Club form a PAC to oppose this this constitutional amendment? It's the website is at powergrab.info. This coalition consists entirely of environmental groups and consumer groups who care about community choice and view this as an opportunity both for consumers and the environment. And you know, this initiative next June is simply an effort by a monopoly to protect its monopoly by maintaining its customers in captivity, period.
Go
ahead. I'm sorry, Scott.
Another email from Patsy B., who writes, we're not hearing from Transition West Marin. Is this because West Marin is a group of unincorporated towns? Please address this question. I don't know if she's thinking of places like Point Reyes and Olema or just everything that's unincorporated. Dawn?
Yeah, those towns in West Marin are included under the unincorporated part of the county of Marin. So because the county of Marin is a member of the Marin Energy Authority, those towns would be included and would have the option of choosing this power supply.
Okay, let's try to sneak another call here. Peter is on the line in Davis. Hi, Peter.
Hi.
Go ahead.
I was sitting in on a lot of the hearings for the proposed SMUD annexation by Davis, West Sacramento, and Woodland about 4 years ago, and a lot of the same issues were brought up about greater green portfolio, lower costs, and, I study this really closely. And the devil's in the details, and a lot of people are using things on historical pricing and models, and we're really going into uncharted waters with this. And you know, I think the people in Marin really need to look at the details closely, because, like in the case of this annexation, had the proposal gone through, the residents would have paid substantially more for their power than they were led to believe. So, you know, I don't know that people should be. You know, it sounds good, and I think, like David pointed out, green energy supplies are already tight and being brought in. And the only way that I think Marin can help is to just, you know, people be politically active to get more green power online in general.
All right, Peter, thanks for the call. Don Wise, you know, underlying a lot of this opposition or concern that Severin, Bornstein, and others have expressed is that politicians don't really have the wherewithal to make these kinds of huge decisions. And if you think back, for example, to energy deregulation in the late 1990s, I guess it was. It passed the legislature unanimously. Turned out to be a disaster for the state of California. So I think that's, even for folks who are not necessarily biased in one way or another, that may be one of the underlying concerns. Do you hear those concerns, and do you feel like you've protected yourself from that?
Yeah, absolutely. As I said, we're following the model of municipal utilities who operate in the same way, where you have elected officials that are accountable to their community, making decisions using technical expertise that they have in-house. And we would be using the same model. Palo Alto and SMUD operate municipal utilities, and they both provide a 100% renewable option to their customers. The SMUD program is called Greenergy. Palo Alto has a program where 20% of their customers have actually selected that product, even though it costs a little bit more. We think that local government-run energy businesses are doing an excellent job at providing choices for their customers because they're more accountable.
And you feel do you have any sleepless nights? Do you worry at all that, gee, we forgot something? We may have forgotten something?
Quite the opposite. This process and this draft contract has been subjected to more peer reviews, more legal and technical scrutiny than many of its kind. So we think it's been thoroughly analyzed.
All right. Don Wise, Interim Director of the Marin Energy Authority, thanks to you for being with us this hour. Thanks also to Paul Fenn from Local Power Incorporated, David Rubin from PG&E, and Severin Bornstein from the Energy Institute at UC Berkeley's Haas School of Business. And thanks also to Mayor Gene McLamey, who called in from Novato earlier in the hour. Forum is produced by Tina Lauerberg, Judy Campbell, and Kevin Guillory. Our senior editor is Dan Zoll. Forum's executive producer is Raul Ramirez. Our engineer today is Danny Bringer. I'm Scott Schaefer, here for Michael Krasny. Thanks for listening.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Claude and Louise Rosenberg Jr. Family Foundation.